Next is item C, is general discussion, and we'll do this as an opportunity for the commissioners and the directors. We'll discuss any activities or items of interest to the full commission. Anybody have comments at this time?
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. Yesterday, we interviewed four candidates to fill one position from Region 3, and it was extremely enjoyable to find three really good candidates, two that were very good and one that was outstanding that we will recommend in a little more detail at the commission meeting on either Friday or Saturday. I don't know when it'll come up. But good candidates, and the interviews went very well. I won't say any more about that right now.
This is Commissioner Carpenter.
Yeah, Mr. Carpenter.
I have two brief items somewhat related. Firstly, we finished up the North of Falcon PFMC process yesterday, and I'll get back to that in just a moment. At the Mill Creek North of Falcon meeting, I don't even remember, a week and a half ago, came out of a meeting and was asked by Bob Turner of NOAA to join him for lunch, and with him was a gentleman named Russell Dunn, National Policy Advisor for Recreational Fisheries at NOAA. So we had a very interesting lunch, exchanged views on things. He knows little or nothing about the Northwest, but he wants to learn, so I've set up some follow-up discussions and meeting in May with him, and really interesting perspective and a really aggressive young fellow, so I look forward to that. North of Falcon, after doing 20-some of these, I have to say that the one we just completed yesterday, I think, was the best of any. I think Phil, the director, his staff were spot on. We had very few bumps in the roads, and the bumps that occurred, we were able to put them behind us in reasonably short order, and I think the outcome of that, the seasons that are now created for the for all the user groups, both state and tribal, I think are meaningful, fair, and I look forward to the public knowing about these through news releases and the media and so on. And I want to commend Director Anderson and his staff for the job well done.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. Any comments or questions to Larry?
Mr. Vice Chair.
Commissioner Wecker.
Since we're on the topic of North of Falcon, I'm very happy to hear that Commissioner Carpenter was pleased with the outcome. That's great news. Do you think you're going to have some recommendations for the commission for our North of Falcon policy consideration? Did you have some ideas?
I perhaps will. Right now, I'm very candidly, probably like most of the staff and the public that participated in this, I'm sort of foggy from the ongoing meetings and data that came and went and changed and dates and times and a lot of numerical stuff. And so maybe a day or two in my own bed, I might have some, I think I'll have some positive suggestions. But all in all, I think a lot of the things that happened in the past didn't happen this year, and I felt really good. I think it was better organized, but, you know, there's always room to talk about things, and I'll be more than happy to exchange views with anyone.
Great. Thanks.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Phil. I have a few additional comments to provide on a couple of different items when you're ready.
Yes, please. Director Anderson, go ahead.
Okay. Let me stick with the North Falcon theme here for a few minutes, and I appreciate it very much, Commissioner Carpenter, being able to attend and assist and consult with him as we went along. We did make some process changes this year that I think proved out to be successful. Among those process changes were to have some to separate some of the regional meetings from the what we refer to as kind of our major North of Falcon 1 and 2 meetings. And And we did that in a manner such that the Ocean and Columbia River meetings were held separately, actually the day before the kind of general North of Falcon session. We did that in Olympia rather than making those folks drive all the way up to Linwood. We also held some additional public meetings, the one that Commissioner Carpenter mentioned up in Mill Creek, which we had done the year before, but we had about, there were some, certainly some issues up in the north this year, particularly Skagit and that, and the Baker Sockeye fishery that resulted in a big turnout up there of 75 or 80 people. Hats off to, just hats off to Pat Patillo. I mean, he did a great job this year, and he and the Region 4 staff and other folks here in Olympia helped pull that off. We went to Port Angeles again this year. We went to Kennewick again this year. Ron Warren did a great job, and that was another little bit of a difference this year is that we did all of the Willapa and Grace Harbor discussions either within the region or here in Olympia, and we did have our final meeting where we wrapped up those conversations here in Olympia last week. Ron and Kurt Hughes and the folks that support them out of Region 6 were able to finalize agreements with Quinault Indian Nation, the Quileute Tribe, and Ho Tribe here this week. So those are all complete. It's fair to say that the Grays Harbor and Willapa meetings, which I sat in on last, I think that was last Friday, we had some difficult sessions, and it was a full eight or nine hours worth of work to do. Had a lot of people, constituents from both the commercial and the recreational interest at that meeting, and had some kind of tough issues to talk through, even though we do have more fish to work with this year in both of those areas. Came out of that with, I think everybody feeling pretty good about it, that we reached some fishery regimes that were going to provide meaningful opportunities for both gear types. Puget Sound has always presented a variety of issues that. And I think the one thing that I could say about this year, I think last year we get at this time, the day after North of Falcon, we weren't feeling good about the process. The tribes weren't feeling good about it. And I think there's a marked difference in the way I think we feel about how things work this year, how we communicated, how we were able to resolve some issues. Last year, I was finishing up negotiations at 1:30 in the morning with a lot of emotion and frayed nerves, frayed relationships, and that did not occur this year. Not to say we didn't have some tough issues, but we were able to resolve them without having that degree of tension and interpersonal difficulties that we had last year. We had a number of issues with the Lummi Nation that we worked through. Not to say that they're all solved, but everything from duck hunters, non-Indian duck hunters on reservation, to gillnet folks setting their gear in the area that is near borders or is on the reservation, some of those things, Bellingham Bay and Lucky Bay, we made some steps to address that. We got our Area 77A CHUM schedule, which has always been in recent years, has been a very, very difficult issue. We've dealt with kind of in the heat of the battle in October. We got those schedules arranged this year at this meeting, so there's a lot more definition and a lot more agreement about exactly what we're going to do, and we didn't, as we've done in years past, put that one off. So that was a positive. Same thing for our Hood Canal commercial chum fishery. We've had some significant issues there between the treaty and non-treaty fishery, and I think we have those surrounded and agreed to this year as well. We did make several recommendations relative to selective fisheries, and I know there was some concern on the part of Commissioner Mankin and probably Commissioner Carpenter as well initially, that from our initial response that we got from the tribes. But at the end of the day, we were able to add a couple of marked selective fisheries. One very important one was in Hood Canal, and which we call Area 12. And so we will be having that transition to a marked selective fishery this year. That resulted in providing some savings to mid-Hood Canal Chinook, which was probably the most difficult stock we had this year to meet our exploitation rate ceiling of 12% or less. We also were able to add a winter marked selective fishery opportunity in Area 6. And so that's going to be another good opportunity. And we added in the first 2 weeks of July in Area 9 a coho opportunity that had not been there previously, and then that will transition to our marked selective, and we will add marked selective Chinook to that midway through the month. So that all those things were a positive, and in terms of the monitoring sampling programs that the tribes were looking for from us, we had issues to work through there, but we did resolve those, and so the package and we found is pretty complete. The last area that I would mention in Puget Sound is the Green River, where we have an escapement forecast well below the 5,800 goal, along the lines of about 2,000 fish. So we want to make sure that we provide every bit of protection to those fish that make it to the spawning grounds above Highway 18. So both the tribe, the Muckleshoot tribe, and we agreed to close all fisheries for a six-week period, beginning in the middle of September, to ensure that we don't have people out there walking on reds and interfering with the potential success of those fish that do spawn naturally in that stretch of the river. We did keep a portion of the river up above. We closed about 14 river miles from Highway 18 on up through the majority of the Chinook spawning area. We did provide and keep an area open above that where there's some summer steelhead fishing that will still be able to take place. Turning to the Columbia River, we were squeezed on, you know, our two stocks in terms of the lower river below Bonneville, the lower coho, natural coho stock, which we have an overall exploitation rate ceiling of 15%, and we share that inside the Columbia River as well as in the ocean fisheries, and with the coho hatchery production or forecast being down this year, the impacts on that natural stock were higher than what they would otherwise be, and so we got squeezed pretty tight on that. And then the other one is lower river Columbia tules, Chinook, the natural stock of tules, which are also listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. We have an exploitation rate ceiling of 41% on that. And so, and again, that is attributed an overall exploitation rate that takes into account the fisheries in off Canada as well as off the Washington-Oregon coast and then in river. We did get there's a pretty significant reduction in the Canadian fisheries off the west coast of Vancouver Island and northern British Columbia this year, pursuant and consistent with the Pacific Salmon Treaty. So that gave us some relief on that stock and gave us a little bit more flexibility to provide some additional Chinook opportunity for both in the treaty troll as well as the ocean and in-river sport and commercial fisheries. So that was good news. So we have some pretty significant Chinook opportunities all the way through those areas. So that's going to be a good thing. But we were able to squeeze out getting the Buoy 10 fishery through Labor Day weekend, and we were also able to squeeze and get the fishery above Tongue Point, which is just up, not too far upstream from the Astoria Meg Bridge, on up through the Bonneville Dam area through the 9th of September, which is a Sunday. And then the other thing that I build into the modeling that I've yet to get, that's going to require some more work, I do have a little bit of impacts in there allotted for the potential of a marked selective Chinook fishery in the main stem above Tongue Point, likely beginning September 10th, so immediately following the closure of the fishery I just described. But I haven't got those details worked out yet. I did meet with the Columbia River tribes this week on that fishery and have some more details to work out. Pretty short-handed there in the North Falcon process this week, your river policy perspective. The Steve Williams, who's the main policy player for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, had some health issues that didn't allow him to be at the meeting. And so it was pretty much just me there dealing with that. So got as far as we could, but have a little bit further to go. So we'll see if we can put something together there. I had one other. Oh, the other thing is we do have, again, a marked selective fishery for Chinook provided in the ocean fishery, about a two-week fishery in the area off Westport and the Columbia River area. It starts about a week earlier this year, starts June 9th. We've also got a two-week opportunity up in Lapush in Nia Bay, and that's covered by under the same overall quota of 8,000. It starts a week later in Lapush and Nia Bay. There's a little bit of a mishmash of start dates in the ocean fisheries because of the differences in the availability of Chinook and the differences in the coho quotas up there along the coast. But I think we ended up in a good spot with, again, 2 weeks of marked selective fishing opportunity for Chinook in June for both for all four areas. So that's a new. I mean, this will be the third year for that fishery, so that's a new marked selective fishery for Chinook and really the very first one we've ever had in the ocean. So I would just close by saying we had some great participation from our stakeholders, our advisors, many of whom stuck with us through the bitter end, which is hard to do the last week because there's lots of downtime for them as we have our individual meetings with the tribes on a regional basis and work through the council process. But really appreciated our advisors and our stakeholders who stuck with us and helped us, I think, craft some good fishing opportunity while at the same time ensuring that we met our conservation objectives. So all in all, I think all of us are feeling good about the process that we had this year. The relationships that we have with the tribes, we think, are on an ending note, are significantly healthier, better than they were last year. We got through some additional issues that were held over to try to get resolved through the summer period that we're not going to have to do this year. So we really do have a complete package, with the one exception of working out to see if we can provide that 1 week additional marked selective fishery in the main stem above Tongue Point. So I think I hit as much as my memory is holding right now. I think everybody's pretty tired. It's been a pretty grueling weeks as normal, but feeling good about the outcome.
Thank you, Director. That was encouraging and well summarized. We'll get into this and more in our full meeting probably next weekend. So thank you. Any other areas you'd like to bring to the commission at this time, Director Anderson?
A couple of other areas. There's been some activity between the Canadian consulate and the governor's office and on the U.S. Canada Albacore treaty that I have gotten pulled into. I met with the Canadian consulate on Wednesday of this week, I believe it was. up in Seattle, and it has to do with the essentially the cancellation of the fishery regime that is a part of the U.S.-Canada-Albacore Treaty. And the impact of that is that the Canadian vessels would not be able to fish for albacore in the United States exclusive economic zone, which goes out to 200 miles. Conversely, our U.S. albacore boats would not be able to fish within the Canadians' exclusive economic zone as well. There's a much bigger impact, arguably, on the Canadian fleet than there is the U.S. fleet, because the Canadian fleet has spent a lot of time in the U.S. waters and taken a substantial portion of their annual catch in U.S. waters. The U.S. Fishing fleet, the industry, there's really two big organizations that are advocating a suspension of the fishery regime. And it's brought about by conflict on the grounds, crowding on the grounds, aggressive behavior by Canadian vessels on the grounds. Their vessels are generally bigger than ours. They tend to use that as a means for aggressive fishing tactics on the grounds. And the additional piece is that their vessels have generally gotten a little bigger over time. Their capacity is greater. As a result, they're not coming into U.S. ports to take on provisions, fuel, and other provisions as much as they were. And they're also not delivering as large a proportion of their catch into Washington and Oregon ports. So the economic benefits associated with the reciprocal access to the waters by our respective fleets is not as great to the United States as it once was. So all of those factors have led to a point where the United States State Department conveyed to their counterparts in Ottawa about 10 days ago that we would be suspending the fishing regime portion of the treaty for 2012. As a result, the Canadian consulate has contacted the governor's office prior to the 1st of March, indicating that they would like the governor to write a letter in support of a continuation of the fishery regime. So there's been a lot of activity associated with that over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm continuing to work with the governor's staff on that matter. So, and then the other one that I've had some hour and a half this morning with Steve Pazanger and Nate Pamplin is on our Wolf Conservation Management Plan implementation measures, and particularly the issue associated with Roy Graber and his efforts to protect his livestock that he has in a fenced area that amounts to about of a 3-acre place. He's been really great in terms of working with us, and we've non-lethal measures of protecting his livestock, including electric fencing and flattery and turbo flattery that they're using, providing him pyrotechnic, which are called these screamers, along with the launcher, which is kind of like a glamorized bottle rocket. And so the additional issue is whether or not in looking at our plan, we have this sufficient latitude to issue a Cotton Yak permit. So we're in active discussions, or I'm in active discussions internally here on that matter. Steve has been talking quite extensively with Scott Nielsen from the Cattlemen's Association up there in Stevens County on this issue. So we're working through that issue here today. And I know Steve and the implementation crew has been working hard with livestock owners that are having issues with wolves. I think there's also been progress made in terms of the hiring of the two bio positions. I'm just getting an update here today that they do have two top candidates. I believe that they're coming forward with a recommendation, so I'm expecting to see those here, if not today, on Monday, and so they're making progress there. So on the wolf conservation management front, that's some of the activities that's been going on. I will certainly admit that that I'm not totally up to speed on everything right yet, but I'm going to make every effort to do that here today. And I, maybe the last thing is you may have seen the news release that went out here yesterday, announcing that we were able to add 6 more days to the Chinook retreat that would take it through April 13th. So that fishery's progressing, and obviously that's a real popular one. And we're hoping that we see some additional angler trips and fishing opportunities as a result of that extension.
Thank you, Director Anderson. Is there any questions for the director?
Vice Chair, Commissioner Smitten.
Yes, Commissioner Smitten.
Yes. Phil, could you or Nate let us know the outcome of your discussions on the Cottony Act? Just the email will be fine, but that's really a significant issue, and if you take a course of action, could you let us know?
Yes, I certainly will.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yeah, Commissioner Perry.
I had a couple of things. Number one, I would encourage the department to look at issuing a Cottony Act permit. I think from a livestock producer point of view, this would show significant action on the ground and not just talk and so forth. I think this would make a real difference in the confidence that those people might have in the department's ability to manage wolves. Just a comment, really. The other thing that and this may be unfair after the director has been through all the North of Falcon stuff and so forth, but there's been several mentions in news about some work that has been done on sardines and the fact that they're going down, and this is a major food fish for a lot of other species. And I wondered if there was any, director maybe had any comment on those news articles.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Perry, sure. So there were two employees of the South Science Center from NOAA Fisheries that published an article or a paper on sardines that they did independent of the agency, independent of the management process, independent of the Scientific and Statistical Committee that oversees approval of stock assessments and those types of issues that govern the fishery for sardine, and it is suggesting a couple of things, and I will just speak to a couple of the high spots that I have seen in it. One is that the fisheries in the north, that is to say off southern British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, our fishery is predominating on older fish, 3 and 4 year fish, and that could potentially be a problem from a productivity perspective. And they're also, and maybe this is really the bigger factor, is that we're seeing a return in a pretty big way to a cold water regime off the West Coast that typically results in smaller biomass sizes of sardines, conversely higher biomass sizes of anchovies. Certainly saw that. We've seen that in the past. And they were suggesting that several of these factors led them to the conclusion that we were likely to see the type of collapse that we in the sardine biomass that we saw in the 1940s when there were huge harvests of sardines, particularly off Central and Southern California. You probably, those of you who've been to Monterey are certainly so familiar with the big sardine processing plants there. My perspective is that we are in a significantly different place today relative to the management of the sardine resource than we were in the 40s. We have, in my view, taken on a much different management approach that recognizes the significant forage value that the sardine resource has for a variety of other species, fish species as well as seabirds. And so we have a couple of different measures in place within our current management scenario that I think provide a lot of recognition and protection and for the forage fish value of sardines, including a 15% exploitation rate ceiling on sardines. And, you know, if you think about that, a relatively short-lived fish, highly productive when the conditions are right. And, you know, conversely to some of our salmon exploitation rates that we just got through talking about that are 35, 40, even 45%. So we need to watch this very close. We need to be precautionary in our management, in our harvest allowances. We are reducing in a significant way the harvest of sardines in the last couple of years over what we did several years ago when the biomass was larger. We're going to do our level best to stay out in front of this. We do have a threshold in our management plan whereby if the population falls below a certain level, we wouldn't have a fishery. We do take into account the ocean climate conditions, particularly associated with sea temperatures, that they're obviously an indicator of the type of regime we have, cold versus warm water regime. So I take seriously the cautionary notes that those two scientists were expressing in their paper. I do believe that we are in a much different position, though, from a management perspective and a stock assessment perspective than we were in the 40s when we witnessed the collapse that we did. And so that would be my response, Commissioner Perry.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the commission?
Mr. Vice Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Wecker?
I'd like to ask Director Anderson to elaborate a little bit more. Going back to North of Falcon, a couple items. You mentioned that because the Canadians are harvesting Chinook less, giving us some relief. Could you explain how it was that we accomplished that agreement with the Canadians, that they allow some of the Puget Sound Chinook to pass by their waters and not harvest them?
Commissioner Wecker, Mr. Vice Chair, the U.S.-Canada Salmon Treaty has transitioned over time in terms of what I would say of its sophistication. And one of the big changes that was made relative to Chinook, when the treaty was originally negotiated back in 1985, there were set quotas for example, the fishery off the west coast of Vancouver Island that were blind to the abundance of Chinook in any particular year. So when stocks were stronger, arguably those quotas were too low, and when the stocks were weaker, they were arguably too high, placing a larger burden on fisheries off in Washington, to a lesser degree off of Oregon, to bear the conservation burden in years of low abundance. We've transitioned over time to a point where we have two different management regimes that are contained and identified within what we call the Chinook Annex or the Chinook Chapter of the treaty. And that is that our ocean fisheries off of Southeast Alaska and British Columbia are now managed based on an aggregate abundance management base. They're called an AABM fishery management. So the amount of fish that can be harvested off of Canada and Southeast Alaska varies from year to year depending on the overall abundance of Chinook salmon, both those stocks that originate in Washington, Oregon, as well as off British Columbia. So when we have years that have higher abundances, like we did last year as it relates to British Columbia stocks, this year we had a reduction in the Spring Creek, what we call the Spring Creek hatchery component of our stocks. What resulted in that is a lowering of the harvest rate from an aggregate perspective off British Columbia and Southeast Alaska, which led to a lowering of the harvest rate on stocks that originate in Washington, including, for example, the lower Columbia River tules. So then that's what precipitated the reduction in the fisheries off British Columbia, was that the overall abundance of fish, this aggregate abundance, was lower than last year, and as a result, pursuant to the Chinook Annex of the treaty, they had to reduce their harvest rate, and so the quotas were less. And so that the difficulty we have is that we don't know that when we come out of the March, when we go into our North of Falcon process, and we come out of the March council meeting with our ocean options, those calculations haven't been made yet and updated. So as a proxy, we use the previous year's inputs as proxies. So last year, we did that, and then the calculation was done in the third week of March, and the abundances were up, and therefore the harvest off the Columbia was up, and therefore the impacts on our stocks were greater than what we modeled. And as a result, we ended up having to reduce our fisheries further when we got to the decision point in April over what we thought we were going to have to do. This year, kind of the opposite happened relative to the lower Columbia River stocks, and that is that the impact was actually about 2% less than what we had modeled. So we got a little bit more room in terms of being able to craft fisheries. There was, however, an opposite effect on stocks such as Mid-Hood Canal Chinook, where the fact that we didn't have as many hatchery fish present off the British Columbia coast meant the harvest rate on those stocks actually went up a little bit from what we had modeled. So it worked in both directions and gave us problems from those two perspectives. But so we had that aggregate abundance-based management, the AABM. The second one is we also have an individual stock-based management, the ISBM, and those fishery regimes apply to the inside fisheries in Canadian waters, where their fisheries have to be crafted based on an individual stock-by-stock basis. So I won't go into that one, but I hope I didn't say so much that was confusing, but that's in general what happened and what the parameters and protocols of the Chinook Annex and how it can affect the opportunities and the impacts on Washington origin stocks and Canadian fisheries.
Thanks. That, I think, gives commissioners a real sense of the complexity that we face. It's just astounding. I think listening to you, Director Anderson, we have to be just stunned by the amount of detail and complexity to each one of these moving parts. So I personally am incredibly impressed by your ability, after so many weeks of hard work to explain that so clearly. Very impressive.
So, Mr. Vice Chair,
I do remember hearing a conversation at one point that we had come up with a compensation approach, that we were offering some cash to the Canadians in exchange for their fishermen foregoing opportunity. Was that something that I imagined, or was that part of the negotiation at some point in the past?
Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Wexner, no, your memory is very good. That is exactly what happened when the Chinook Annex was renegotiated in 2007, is that there was a 30% reduction in impacts on stocks when compared to the annex that it supplanted, and there was a payment of $30 million from the United States government to the Canadian government in response to that reduction. And similarly, there was a 15% reduction in Southeast Alaska's Chinook fisheries as well. They were also compensated in the amount of $15 million for that reduction. Even though that was negotiated in 2007, I believe the actual payments to the Canadian government were just completed this year, and they have been, as I understand it, putting a large portion of those funds toward a buyback program, because their commercial salmon troll fishery has all but been eliminated off the West Coast. They are allocating more of their Chinook to their recreational fisheries, and they've allocated almost all their coho to their recreational fisheries. So the one-time great commercial troll fishery off the west coast of Vancouver Island that used to take like 1.2 million coho has all but been eliminated, and what remains is the coho fishery on by their recreational fishery.
Thank you. That's really, truly a dramatic change that's taken place that's helping us with the fisheries that we want to design in Puget Sound and elsewhere. So thanks for that explanation. One other topic I wanted to bring up, I heard about the two-pole opportunity in Willapa. Is that true? Are we agreeing to that now?
Yes, Commissioner Wecker, that is true, and we do intend to implement that this year.
And how is that? We have authority to allow two-pole? I thought it was just limited to fresh water in the statute.
We have the ability to authorize the use of two poles within state waters.
Okay.
Thank you.
If I'm wrong, we're in trouble. I'm 99% certain of that. Certainly, we wouldn't have proposed it had we not had the statutory authority to do so. But there's Tulalip Bay is another area where we're providing that opportunity.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe. Thank you, Director and Commissioner Wecker. Be interesting maybe to get the full details of the two-pole thing. I think it has a significant revenue impact to the department in our meeting and our director's update in Olympia next week. I think Commissioner Carpenter had a question.
Well, I guess it's more of a comment. I think the director, his description of what goes on at Pacific Salmon Commission is right on. I had some dialogue the other day with one of my counterparts. I'm on the southern panel of the Pacific Salmon Commission, and I had a discussion with one of the Canadian southern panel members. And what DFNO has decided to do, I'm told, is to reduce. They have what's called the Area G troll fishery, which is off the southwest coast of Vancouver Island, which can very much cause harm to our southerly migrating fish. They've reduced that Area G troll fishery by a fair amount this year, and they have not made any changes in the recreational fishery, I'm told. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Commissioner Kretmer. Any other comments or questions for the director? I got one issue. It's more of just an update. I think the director has been more than busy the last couple of weeks, and that's relative to Lake Roosevelt's, our largest freshwater fishery, and our two co-managers, the Colvilles and the Spokane, have implemented plans that I think we were somewhat working with them on. The Sandpaw River from the Colvilles is just one of the largest tributaries and habitat areas for spawning and so forth for the Lake Roosevelt. Are implementing a plan to impact predator fish and prioritize native fish, trout and kokanee. The Spokane tribe, which manages with us heavily on the Spokane arm, the other major tributary that comes in, has also implemented a plan to impact predators and prioritize native fish. And Bonneville Power has just been notified us that they're going to draw the lake down below 1240, which is kind of the impact level for our net pens and food supply in the river in the northern part of it particularly, which isn't helpful for us to recover what they did to us at last year's tremendous drawdown. And lastly, from pretty good reliable sources, a couple guides north of Canada from the Canadian border up to have picked up 6 northern pikes this spring. So I have no indications of anything below that in our waters. There seems to be an increased activity in the northern pike in the Canadian waters. So just some information for the director and staff to be aware of. So. Hearing no more questions.
I have Mr. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If I may. 77.32.470, Section 6 says the Commission may adopt rules to allow the use of 2 fishing poles per license holder on selected state waters. So Willapaw Bay is a state water, so we're good.
Thank you, Director. Appreciate the clarification. Well, let's proceed on here. We'll go into Commission committee reports. Who would like to give us a quick, brief rundown of the last committee meeting?
Mr. Vice Chair,
Commissioner Wecker?
I will report on the committee that is being called the Big Tent Committee, for lack of a better name. We're working on the name. We had a meeting in Moses Lake. We discussed the specific focus of the committee and our desires to make a notable contribution in some way, trying to be strategic. And we decided that the theme that brings together, that reflects the common interests of both the consumptive stakeholders and the non-consumptive stakeholders, the fishers, the hunters, the wildlife appreciators, would be the common interest in getting their kids, getting all children, to go outside and experience the great outdoors. There's a book that has kind of come emblematic to this whole movement, the desire to get kids off the couch and outside enjoying and physically recreating. The book is called No Child Left Inside. And evidently, Commissioner Smith is friends with the author, and he's offered to get us copies of the book. So one of our first tasks is going to be to consult the literature, see what experts have come up with to suggest a course of action. And so we're going to become informed. If any other commissioners want to join us in our reading assignment, let me know. I've been meaning to read this book for quite some time, and so we're gonna force ourselves to do that and get educated. And then we're going to try to see if we can figure out a good course of action that's practical, effective, efficient with our time. And we expect that it'll be also useful to continue to be tapped into the Governor's Get Out West initiative. We'll be hearing a briefing. The Commission will be receiving a briefing on that initiative. And I asked staff to consider scheduling that briefing sometime before our next meeting with the governor so we can report to her about our interests and our decisions about direction. So it's still in the initial scoping phase, I'd say, but that is the focus that the Big Tent Committee discussed.
Thank you, Commissioner Lecker. I think the only other meeting we had at Moses Lake was the Wildlife Committee, which I chair. And as you can imagine, our focus of the meeting was to discuss the upcoming hunting regulations that will be in front of us at our next meeting for rulemaking. And just to give everybody a heads up, I think it was a great discussion that we had, probably our best hunting Wildlife Committee meeting we've had in years, very open and candid and free flow and suggestions working together to try to enhance opportunity for our hunters. But there are a couple of issues that continue to get input onto and are probably will be in front of us to discuss at our meeting next week. And those four areas are related to the lighted knock, electronic decoys, the clock on elk season, and the cougar and bear season and take quotas. So you might want to each of us review those and get some thoughts on it for discussion at our up and coming meeting for rulemaking. Other than that, I think it was a lengthy meeting, and maybe the other committee members might want to make any comments. Please say so.
Not really, no.
You covered it well.
Thank you. Any other committee reports or information that we want to bring up at this time?
Mr. Vice Chair.
Commissioner Wecker.
Yeah, one more thing. I'm interested in understanding how many commissioners will be going on the Okanagan tour. We want to start thinking ahead about what we need to do, and what the purpose, what the themes might be that are brought up. So, first of all, how many commissioners who are on this conference call now are going on that Okanagan tour?
Six of them.
Six commissioners?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. I had a brief conversation with Commissioner Caney yesterday about the expectation that there will be members of the public interested in going along with the commission on this tour, and that poses some logistical challenges, but we will have to accommodate the public if we have a quorum. The meeting, it will be a meeting to discuss business. And so we'll have to comply with the Open Public Meetings Act. And so it's, I'd like to invite the commission to think about what you want to achieve on this tour. Do you want to talk with county commissioners? Do you want to create a forum to address specific issues? It's similar to the tour that we took, I believe it was 2008, to look at the pilot grazing program, Kittitas County. We had, I'd say, 40 or 50 people tagging along with us, driving in their own vehicles, stopping at the various sites, to listen to the presentations. But what will happen if we don't plan and think ahead is that members of the public will want to comment, will want to discuss the topics, and it can get a little awkward. So just inviting the commission now to start thinking about what you would like to achieve during the Okanagan tour, what questions you might like to address, who you would like to hear information from. So you, I will not be going on that tour, but I think it's a good idea to plan ahead.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, I guess I just talked with Miranda about this a little bit. I guess it's mostly just to be prepared. You know, you may have county commissioners want to go. You may have 20 folks show up. You could also have 150 show up. It depends on for instance, if the newspaper decides to post this and encourage people to come. They haven't been exactly supportive of the land purchases in the past, and in fact, the last two or three issues that have come before the commission since I've been on it, I'll get home and read the paper, and there's usually a fairly good editorial about not in favor of these types of purchases and not in favor of even water rights transfers that occurred in the last meeting, and fairly telling people they should tell their commission that they don't want this to happen. And I'm not saying that's the entire view of the whole county. I'm just saying if we host a meeting that's an open public meeting in Okanagan County of commissioners looking at land purchases, I would bet there'll be a kind of an entourage that will follow along, and maybe they want to say something up front, or maybe they just want to see some of these properties as well. So just to be fair, I wanted to make sure we understood what could be could happen on this tour.
Thank you, Commissioner Keeney. This is Commissioner Dubia. My view is that this would be an information fact-finding opportunity for commissioners to participate in that area, and that we would have to have the public join us, but I think we would want to have a meeting that would probably, as we have in the past, tell them that the commissioners will be asking questions, but the public will be there to observe and listen, but we won't have questions and answers at this time from the public. We have commission meetings set up for public input that they can express their opinions at that time. But I do feel we should also have some kind of a structure or meeting with the local county commissioners. And I think the other part of goal for me would be to reach out and show our concern and want to work with county commissioners and learn as much about our proposals and our long-term plans in that area as we can. So I think in our meeting next week, we need to kind of structure exactly what our goals and objectives are and how we're going to get there. But those would be my two, one fact-finding, and the other one is to reach out and exchange thoughts with the county commissioners, not to be decision-making, but just mainly to express and answer questions that they have or we have of them. So, any other comments? Hearing none, we'll move on to the summary of commission requests. And on this, if I could, I think the key thing here is to make sure these are still, I think, viable subject requests, that they've been approved by the full commission, and want to ensure that the director and staff timeframes are still appropriate. So Director Anderson, could kind of walk us through the items we have on our request and just confirm if the dates are still fine or if he wants to modify anything, let us know, as well as any commissioner thoughts. Director Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Vice Chair, I think. let me just, I'm looking at the handout that Tammy provided us. Looking at the first one,
The only thing I saw on
this. So the first one's okay. I'm getting a little help from Joe here, as well as the second one. So the IT support and infrastructure, the capital assets management program piece is good for April. The orca whale listing management piece we see we have for summer. I think it looks like it's tentatively scheduled for August. The pheasant habitat piece, I know that Commissioner Carpenter, I specifically asked wildlife program staff members to contact Commissioner Carpenter, which we did, and we've had some discussions with him, and I think we also actually had a discussion as part of when we were over in Moses Lake. It is tentatively scheduled for June, but we did spend some time with Commissioner Carpenter in addition to providing the response to the specific request.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Commissioner Carpenter.
Yes, Commissioner Carpenter.
Pardon me for interrupting, Phil. The staff went overboard to bring me up to speed, and I think I raised this question at my very first meeting in January, and I was very much unaware of some of the programs that the department was doing. I think I have enough knowledge about what they're doing now to move on. I don't think we need to tie up staff's time and commission time on this unless someone else has a really heartburn over knowing more. My whole intent was to try and figure out how to maximize some opportunity both for pheasant hunters and the revenue for the department. But it looks to me like it's moving along pretty well, and I don't know that I need to pursue this. So if I don't know what the policy is, but I would probably rescind that request if no one has any objections.
I guess I'm not sure about rescinding. Do we need to have a vote to take it off the list?
Mr. Vice Chair, I think it would be appropriate to vote just because we did vote to approve it. Mm-hmm. A motion passed by the full commission, so we can very quickly dispose of this. I move to rescind this item on the commission request list.
I would second that, Commissioner Perry.
Seconded by Commissioner Perry. Any questions, comments? All in favor of rescinding, say yes.
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 All opposed, say no. Motion passed. That will remove the pheasant habitat request.
Okay, thank you. I learned some things, too, being in the meeting with Commissioner Carpenter, so it's a good opportunity for me as well. Puget Sound shrimp fishery, the status of the recreational and commercial fisheries, the current commission policy, general biology of the species, magnitude of the coastwide harvest scheduled for June. And then going to, at least for me, to the back page, a briefing on the Get Out West program, that program that came through from the governor's office. What I have here is, which I assume you do too, is later in 2012, allow time for coordinating the annual meeting with the Western Governors Association that's, I think, at the end of May, I believe it is. So we're working with the governor's office on that piece. The presentation on the major Columbia River fisheries, including salmon, sturgeon, and forage fish, is we have that on, I believe, a Thursday afternoon opportunity on May 31st, just prior to your June council meeting. We have that scheduled. And then the last one here, the consideration of regional listing and delisting of wolves. We have that. We're preparing for an analysis type of a report to provide to the commission at your April meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Director. My main concern was that if this time frame, most of everything was coming up here in the next 90 days, and wanted to make sure that we were still not overburdened staff and so forth. So any questions or comments from the commission?
Whatever next step, if any, that are identified associated with that last one, that's where there's a huge workload issue there that we would need to talk about. Depending on what you decide to do in after you heard the analysis.
Thank you, Director. Any other comments or questions before we adjourn?
Mr. Chairman, wasn't there to be a discussion on the WAFA issue?
Yes. Go ahead if you've got questions and comments.
Chair, perhaps this is set for next week, but there's a letter of record from the WAFA describing their previous spotty attendance and support from the 17 states that are involved with the commissioners, group or committee. There was a proposal from them to formally designate a person to attend their semi-annual meetings and then to appoint a, quote, junior member to attend one or both meetings. I received that. I saw it also in our notes that this would be coming up, and I thought it was going to be discussed at this meeting.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I've received that letter also, and I've attended the last three or four or more WAFLA meetings, and I think they're extremely worthwhile. I've also attended the Commissioner's Committee meeting at that session, and the attendance at the Commissioner's meeting has apparently gone down in the last few years. I know there's only about maybe a little more than half the states represented at that meeting, and I think it's a really good way to coordinate, to learn about other states, what's happening on major issues. Wolves have been a topic of conversation as well as other things, and I think we should be represented on that committee. Again, I've filled that role over a number of years, but it really could be any of the people from the commission. And again, I think it's a real opportunity to both communicate and find out what's going on in other states.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes.
Commissioner Smitten?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Commissioner Smitten.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with Commissioner Perry's views that it is an important organization. It's important. I think we have a designee in years past have attended. In fact, I attended the national as well. I would offer a different approach in what they're asking for in our response, and that is that we don't nominate a so-called junior member to attend one or both. Instead, if we would seek an alternate, should the primary not be able to attend. And I would recommend this approach just because of the economic situation we're in and the cost of assuring that we have two people attend these meetings. I think that Commissioner Perry has always brought back a report, and should he not be able to go, simply for the commission to pick an alternate would be a more cost-effective approach.
What was, Commissioners, what was the date of the next meeting?
I believe it occurs the second week of July. That varies a little bit depending on how the dates fall and so forth, but that's where it's been in the past.
I was able to attend one last year, too, and I would concur with Commissioner Perry. Extremely helpful and productive to attend those. Great perspective of what's going on around our bordering states, as well as into the issues that other people are facing, much of the same we have in some cases. So I definitely think if the budget allows, we should have a participant there. Maybe we could each check our calendars to see who would be available to go on those dates, and at our meeting in Olympia next week, we select someone to represent us.
Mr. Vice Chair?
Director Anderson?
The dates, I believe, are July 20th through the 25th, and are the dates of the summer meeting. And I know we're really struggling with this one because it's in Hawaii this year. Obviously, there's a cost issue. There's a
perception
issue. Thank you. The AFWA, Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, has offered to provide at the director's level some financial assistance so that. Because I think a lot of states like ours are struggling with trying to figure out whether or not to go, and if so, you know, what fund source do we use to pay for it? I know for myself, I've got plenty of miles, and I'm going to pay for my whatever ticket to go over there myself, and maybe just use the AFWA money that's provided to the director's office for my hotel and meals. But we've typically had we have 4 to 6 staff members that attend these summer meetings, and I'm just not, I don't know how we're going to be able to do that this year, given where the meeting is and the cost of getting there and staying there.
Mr. Vice Chair?
Yeah, Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. I would agree with the director that it's always difficult for the department to afford to send people, commissioners or the director or staff. The cost is the same. In the last 2 and I think maybe 3 years, the department has paid for my registration, but I paid all the expenses of getting there and staying there, wherever it might be. And if the commission would like me to attend again, I would probably do the same thing for the Hawaii trip. Any support the department could provide would be very much appreciated, because this is an expensive trip. But and the Waffle Group has selected probably a very expensive place to stay to hold the meetings. I'm not too sure why they did that, but it compounds the problem. But I know I paid my own way, and probably would try to do the same thing this time again if the commission selected me to go.
Very generous of you, Commissioner Perry. I think we need to look into what the budget is and find out exactly what kind of reimbursement we could afford, and make this selection process in Olympia next week. Does that sound appropriate by the commission?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Put that on our agenda for next week for a discussion, and maybe we can also take that up in the executive committee meeting. Would that be appropriate, Commissioner Wecker?
Sure, yes.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Hearing none, it's now 9:56. I'll call the meeting to be adjourned. Thanks for everybody for participating.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.